The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hello, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners at WTBR 89.7 FM, Pittsfield Radio. And we've got two short stories for you today. The first one is The Marble Hands by Bernard Capes. The second one is Out of the Storm by William Hope Hodgson. Let's start with The Marble Hands by Bernard Capes. We left our bicycles by the little lych gate and entered the old churchyard. Harriet had told me frankly that he did not want to come, but at the last moment, sentiment or curiosity prevailing with him, he had changed his mind. I knew indefinitely that there was something disagreeable to him in the place's associations, though he had always referred with affection to the relative with whom he had stayed here as a boy. Perhaps she lay under one of these greening stones. We walked round the church with its squat, shingled spire. It was utterly peaceful here on the brow of the little town where the flowering fields began. The bones of the hill were the bones of the dead, and its flesh was grass. Suddenly, Harriet stopped me. We were standing then to the northwest of the chancel, and a gloom of motionless trees overshadowed us. "I wish you'd just look in there a moment," he said, "and come back and tell me what you see." He was pointing toward the little bay made by the low boundary wall, the green floor of which was hidden from our view by the thick branches and a couple of interposing tombs, huge, coffer-shaped, and shut within rails. His voice sounded odd. There was a plunging look in his eyes, to use a gambler's phrase. I stared at him a moment, followed the direction of his hand, then, without a word, stooped under the heavy, brushing boughs, passed round the great tombs, and came upon a solitary grave. It lay there quite alone in the hidden bay, a strange thing, fantastic and gruesome. There was no headstone, but a beveled marble curb, without name or epitaph, enclosed a graveled space from which projected two hands. They were of white marble, very faintly touched with green, and conveyed in that still, lonely spot a most curious sense of reality, as if actually thrust up, deathly and alluring, from the grave beneath. The impression grew upon me as I looked until I could have thought they moved stealthily, consciously, turning in the soil as if to greet me. It was absurd, but I turned and went rather hastily back to Harriet. "All right, I see they are there still," he said, and that was all. Without another word, we left the place and, remounting, continued our way. Miles from the spot, lying on a sunny downside, with the sheep about us in hundreds cropping the hot grass, he told me the story. She and her husband were living in the town at the time of my first visit there, when I was a child of 7. They were known to Aunt Catty, who disliked the woman. I did not dislike her at all, because when we met, she made a favorite of me. She was a little pretty thing, frivolous and shallow, but truly, I know now, with an abominable side to her. She was inordinately vain of her hands, and indeed they were the loveliest things, softer and shapelier than a child's. She used to have them photographed in 50 different positions, and once they were exquisitely done in marble by a sculptor, a friend of hers. Yes, those were the ones you saw. But they were cruel little hands, for all their beauty. There was something wicked and unclean about the way in which she regarded them. She died while I was there, and she was commemorated by her own explicit desire after the fashion you saw. The marble hands were to be her sole epitaph, more eloquent than letters. They should preserve her name and the tradition of her most exquisite feature to remoter ages than any crumbling inscription could reach. And so it was done. That fancy was not popular with the parishioners, but it gave me no childish qualms. The hands were really beautifully modeled on the originals, and the originals had often caressed me. I was never afraid to go and look at them, sprouting like white celery from the ground. I left and, 2 years later, was visiting Aunt Catty a second time. In the course of conversation, I learned that the husband of the woman had married again, a lady belonging to the place, and that the hands, only quite recently, had been removed. The new wife had objected to them, for some reason perhaps not difficult to understand, and they had been uprooted by the husband's order. I think I was a little sorry. The hands had always seemed somehow personal to me, and on the first occasion that offered, I slipped away by myself to see how the grave looked without them. It was a close, lowering day, I remember, and the churchyard was very still. Directly stooping under the branches, I saw the spot. I understood that Aunt Catty had spoken prematurely. The hands had not been removed so far, but were extended in their old place and attitude, looking as if held out to welcome me. I was glad, and I ran and knelt and put my own hands down to touch them. They were soft and cold like dead meat, and they closed caressingly about mine as if inviting me to pull, to pull. I don't know what happened afterwards. Perhaps I had been sickening all the time for the fever which overtook me. There was a period of horror and blankness, of crawling, worm-threaded immurmurments and heaving bones. And then at last the blessed daylight. Harriet stopped and sat plucking at the crisp pasture. "I never learned," he said suddenly, "what other experiences synchronize with mine. But the place somehow got an uncanny reputation, and the marble hands were put back. Imagination, to be sure, can play strange tricks with one."
Well, that was short, but pretty terrifying. Let's move on to our next equally terrifying story, but first, a message from our sponsor.
Whoa, like, what exactly is happening here?
89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal, opportunity grows here, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from Evco Hypnosis. Want to lose weight, quit smoking, sleep better, or relieve stress and anxiety? Evco Hypnosis is here to help you become happier, healthier, and stronger. Call 413-212-0283 or go to evcohypnosis.com. That's EVCOhypnosis.com.
We all know WTBR is great to listen to on 89.7 FM, but did you know that you can listen to WTBR just about anywhere? We've got a web stream, and it's easy to use. Go to WTBRFM.com on your computer and click play. You can use the TuneIn app on your smartphone and connect it to your car's sound system. Or you can use your smart speaker. Just say, "Alexa, play WTBRFM," and there's your community radio station. WTBR, for the love of radio.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And we're back. For those just tuning in, this is Margaret Dixon on Page Turners. I am going to now be reading the story Out of the Storm by William Hope Hodgson. "Hush," said my friend, the scientist, as I walked into his laboratory. I had opened my lips to speak, but stood silent for a few minutes at his request. He was sitting at his instrument, and the thing was tapping out a message in a curiously irregular fashion, stopping a few seconds, then going on at a furious pace. It was during a somewhat longer than usual pause that, growing slightly impatient, I ventured to address him. "Anything important?" I asked.
"For God's sake, shut up!" he answered back in a high, strained voice.
I stared. I am used to pretty abrupt treatment from him at times when he is much engrossed in some particular experiment, but this was going a little too far, and I said so. He was writing, and for reply, he pushed several loosely written sheets over to me with the one curt word, "Read."
With a sense half of anger and half of curiosity, I picked up the first and glanced at it. After a few lines, I was gripped and held securely by a morbid interest. I was reading a message from one in the last extremity. I will give it word for word. "John, we are sinking. I wonder if you really understand what I feel at the present time. You sitting comfortably in your laboratory. I out here upon the waters, already one among the dead. Yes, we are doomed. There is no such thing as help in our case. We are sinking, steadily, remorselessly. God, I must keep up and be a man. I need not tell you that I am in the operator's room. All the rest are on deck, or dead, in the hungry thing which is smashing the ship to pieces. I do not know where we are, and there is no one of whom I can ask. The last of the officers was drowned nearly an hour ago, and the vessel is now little more than a sort of breakwater for the giant seas. Once, about half an hour ago, I went out onto the deck. My God, the sight was terrible. It is a little after midday, but the sky is the color of mud. Do you understand? Gray mud. Down from it there hang vast lappets of clouds. Not such clouds as I have ever before seen, but monstrous, mildewed-looking hulls. They show solid, save where the frightful wind tears their lower edges into great feelers that swirl savagely above us, like the tentacles of some enormous horror. Such a sight is difficult to describe to the living, though the dead of the sea know of it without words of mine. It is such a sight that none is allowed to see and live. It is a picture for the doomed and the dead, one of the sea's hell orgies, one of the things' monstrous gloatings over the living. Say the alive and death, those upon the brink. I have no right to tell of it to you. To speak of it to one of the living is to initiate innocence into one of the infernal mysteries, to talk of foul things to a child. Yet I care not. I will expose in all its hideous nakedness the death side of the sea. The undoomed living shall know some of the things that death has hitherto so well guarded. Death knows not of this little instrument beneath my hands that connects me still with the quick, else would he haste to quiet me. Hark you, John, I have learnt undreamt of things in this little time of waiting. I know now why we are afraid of the dark. I had never imagined such secrets of the sea and the grave, which are one and the same. Listen. Ah, but I was forgetting, you cannot hear. I can. The sea is... Hush! The sea is laughing, as though hell cackled from the mouth of a donkey. It is jeering. I can hear its voice echo like satanic thunder amid the mud overhead. It is calling to me. Call. I must go. The sea calls. Oh, God! Art thou indeed God? Canst thou sit above and watch calmly that which I have just seen? Nay, thou art no God. Thou art weak and puny beside this foul thing which thou didst create in thy lusty youth. It is now God, and I am one of its children. Are you there, John? Why don't you answer? Listen, I ignore God, for there is a stronger than he. My God is here, beside me, around me, and will soon be above me. You know what that means. It is merciless. The sea is now all the God there is. That is one of the things I have learnt. Listen, it is laughing again. God is it, not he. It called, and I went out into the deck. All was terrible. It is in the waist. Everywhere. It has swamped the ship. Only the forecastle, bridge, and poop deck stick up out from the bestial, reeking thing, like three islands in the midst of shrieking foam. At times gigantic billows assail the ship from both sides. They form momentary arches above the vessel, arches of dull, curved water 100 feet towards the hideous sky. Then they descend, roaring. Think of it. You cannot. There is an infection of sin in the air. It is the exhalations from the thing. Those left upon the drenched islets of shattered wood and iron are doing the most horrible things. The thing is teaching them. Later, I felt the vile informing of its breath, but I fled back here to pray for death. On the forecastle, I saw a mother and her little son clinging to an iron rail. A great billow heaved up above them, descended in a falling mountain of brine. It passed, and they were still there. The thing was only toying with them. Yet, all the same, it had torn the hands of the child from the rail, and the child was clinging frantically to its mother's arm. I saw another vast hill hurl up to port and hover above them. Then the mother stooped and bit like a foul beast at the hands of her wee son. She was afraid that his little additional weight would be more than she could hold. I heard his scream even where I stood. It drove to me upon that wild laughter. It told me again that God is not he, but it. Then the thing thundered down upon those two. It seemed to me that the thing gave a bellow as it leapt. It roared about them, churning and growling, and surged away, and there was only one, the mother. There appeared to me to be blood as well as water upon her face, especially about her mouth, but the distance was too great, and I cannot be sure. I looked away. Close to me, I saw something further. A beautiful young girl, her soul hideous with the breath of the thing, struggling with her sweetheart for the shelter of the chart house side. He threw her off, but she came back at him. I saw her hand come from her head, where still clung the wreckage of some form of headgear. She struck at him. He shouted and fell away to leeward, and she smiled, showing her teeth. So much for that. I turned elsewhere. Out upon the thing, I saw gleams, horrid and suggestive, below the crests of the waves. I have never seen them until this time. I saw a rough sailor man washed away from the vessel. One of the huge breakers snapped at him. Those things were teeth. It has teeth. I heard them clash. I heard his yell. It was no more than a mosquito shrilling amid all that laughter, but it was very terrible. There is worse than death. The ship is lurching very queerly, with a sort of sickening heave. I fancy I have been asleep. No, I remember now. I hit my head when she rolled so strangely. My leg is doubled under me. I think it is broken, but it does not matter. I have been praying. What was it? I feel calmer, more resigned now. I think I have been mad. What was it that I was saying? I cannot remember. It was something about God. I believe I blasphemed. May he forgive me. Thou knowest, God, that I was not in my right mind. Thou knowest that I am very weak. Be with me in the coming time. I have sinned, but thou art all-merciful. Are you there, John? It is very near the end now. I had so much to say, but it all slips from me. What was it that I said? I take it all back. I was mad, and God knows. He is merciful, and I have very little pain now. I feel a bit drowsy. I wonder whether you are there, John. Perhaps, after all, no one has heard the things I have said. It is better so. The living are not meant. And yet, I do not know. If you are there, John, you will tell her how it was, but not... Hark! There was such a thunder of water overhead just then. I fancy two vast seas have met in midair across the top of the bridge and burst all over the vessel. It must be soon now. and there were such a number of things I had to say. I can hear voices in the wind. They are singing. It is like an enormous dirge. I think I have been dozing again. I pray God humbly that it be soon. You will not tell her anything about what I may have said, will you, John? I mean those things which I ought not to have said. What was it I did say? My head is growing strangely confused. I wonder whether you really do hear me. I may be talking only to that vast roar outside. Still, it is some comfort to go on, and I will not believe that you do not hear all I say. Hark again! A mountain of brine must have swept clean over the vessel. She has gone right over on her side. She is back again. It will be very soon now. Are you there, John? Are you there? It is coming. The sea has come for me. It is rushing down through the companionway. It is like a vast jet. My God, I am drowning. I am sure.
And the story ends there. Quite a terrifying end, I'd say. The whole thing's pretty terrifying. Well, that's all we have for today on Page Turners. It was a delight reading to you, and I hope you enjoyed listening. As usual, this is Margaret Dixon on WTBR 89.7 FM Pittsfield, and I'll see you next time.